Okay, so we just started recording, so I'm actually going to go back and read that change so it can be in the minutes. We do have a change to the agenda. One of the agenda items on page 17, student services regarding the reopening plan. There's going to be two motions for that item. The first motion is going to be regarding the reopening plan. The second motion is going to be regarding the instructional delivery model to the start of the school year. Also, to all of our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you will be muted for the majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star 6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting, and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Cena. Okay, announcement taken, action taken in closed session. There was no action to announce. Comments from board members. Mr. Davis.
Yes, I would just like to thank all the folks that took the time to make extensive comments on our reopening plan. And I know there's a lot of stress and a lot of worry for all of the aspects of the reopening. And we're just hoping that as we move forward, we will be taking every precaution to protect both the students and teachers and staff. That is one of the biggest challenges of opening the schools. And I think that with the governor's decision to basically put us into long distance learning has given the district some time to pull together more ideas of how to open the plan. So I just hope that everyone understands that this will take some time. You have to be patient. Everybody here at the district, as well as at the sites, is doing everything they can to help students gain the education they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Trustee Allison.
Yeah. I have nothing to say. I'm trying to make my phone, my
yeah.
computer work.
I have nothing. I'm trying to make my computer work.
Yeah, I have nothing. I'm trying to make my phone. Mr. Allison, you're on the other. We can't hear you, Mr. Allison. You need to be on your computer or your phone, one or the other.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
I'm going to call you because it's my connection up here in the hills is so bad that it's going to keep buffering it. So I'll call back.
Okay. Trustee Curry, any more comments?
Yes, I would like to thank everybody that's working so hard to help us reopen schools in a safe manner. I know it's a lot of work, especially for our department heads. And I would like to give a shout out to three of our employees that are resigning or retiring. First one is Lanny Harris, the beloved clerk at McKinney, who is the wife of Glenn Harris, is retiring at the end of the month, the end of June. Another one, second one, is Teresa Smith, who was a beloved secretary everywhere she went in this district. She's also retiring in June. And the last one is Bonnie Vipperman, the high school secretary at MCAA, who had put in 40 years, is retiring October 1st. These employees are what make Marysville great. We have so many of them. And I would like to congratulate those three.
Thank you. Trustee Scott.
Yes, I would also like to agree with Mr. Davis and to thank everyone that was involved with the surveys, everyone that participated, and it was really a very, very good turnout for that, and I'd just like to say thank you. More than ever, our safety is always going to be first for the students. I know that we probably don't have a perfect plan, but neither does anyone else. So we're going to continue to try to press through and try to make it work with the guidance of our governor and our county health official. And somewhere this school year, I think we're going to have a wonderful school year when we get through all of this. And I thank everyone that's been so patient with us. It's not an easy job, but we've done the best that we could. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford.
I would just like to give special thanks to Lanny Harris on her retirement, and congratulations. She's a lifelong friend. And Bonnie Vipperman, who I had the opportunity and the privilege to work with for almost 20 years at Lyndhurst High School. And that would be it. And so the whole staff and everybody that went over and beyond what's right in putting this all together. The whole district should be congratulated. That's all.
Mr. President, this is Paul Allison. Can I say something now? I got my technology working.
Yeah,
I just want to say, we're in the midst of, something that's really crazy. And I know how hard our district staff has been working to try to make this work, and the administrators at the schools have been trying to make it work. But I want people to know that my first concern and priority is the safety of our students and our staff and our community. And anything that we do, that's the direction I'm going to go, and that's going to be my main thought whenever we do come up with something. And it is difficult, and I really do appreciate what we have been trying to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allison. I do have a couple of comments myself. I would like to commend all the stakeholders that gave input and worked on developing the MJUSD draft and then school reopening plan that was unveiled on July 7th. This plan was developed with the health and safety protocols that were in place in May and June. As we know, the health and safety protocols have changed. The unveiled draft plan also allowed stakeholders the opportunity to give more input on what they would like to see in the reopening of schools with more recent health and safety protocols. During the COVID-19 times, all plans are going to be very fluid because the playing field changes often. Again, thank you all. I'd also like to commend Mr. Duena, a teacher at Cedar Lane Elementary School, for providing the translated version of the draft plan to the district. Mr. Duena saw a need, provided a solution. This is the type of dedication our teachers have that makes MJUSD a great district. Thank you, Mr. Duena. I'd also like to point out that in tonight's consent agenda, the board is being asked to approve $232,702 of supporting materials to help enhance our district's distance learning programs to help provide a quality education to our students. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening. Nice to see some of you and see a grid that has a whole bunch more. I thought a good place to start this evening would be to provide a bit of an update on MUTA's continued attempts and efforts to provide educator input regarding the district's reopening plan. I wish I had better news to report. Unfortunately, it appears we are still unable to gain any input or voice into the reopening plan, which you, the board, are voting on tonight. Some people may be thinking, well, none of us really have input now since the governor has mandated we start with distance learning. That is true. However, the reopening plan covers the entire year, not just how we start the school year. The pandemic reopening plan includes how we transition from one phase or model into another and possibly back and forth between those. And it delineates what each phase or model will look like and what our educator roles, duties, and responsibilities will be in each. Therefore, it is still absolutely critical that MJUSD educators have input in the MJUSD plan. Some of you may also be thinking, but wait, the superintendent and the board president have both listed numerous dates and hours that MUTA had input. Unfortunately, it appears we have a communication gap here. When MUTA originally received a draft copy of the district's reopening plan on July 6th, we spent nearly 5 hours out of a 7-hour meeting providing suggestions, thoughts, grammar revisions, and asking questions to help the district revise the plan and make it better. The next day, the district posted a draft of the plan that included nine pages on instructional programs. MUTA had never seen those pages, ever. Yet the message accompanying the draft stated MUTA leadership had input via multiple meetings. When we met with the district the following week on July 13th, after 5 Zoom sessions with our members, we again tried to work collaboratively with the district and offered feedback, suggestions, revisions, and questions from our members. We even shared the fact that large numbers of teachers, parents, administrators, and community members were having a difficult time wading through the 39-page document. So MUTA's bargaining team had created a summary of the district's plan and shared it with the district, as we had also shared it with our members. We did this in an effort to be helpful and cooperative. After approximately an hour, it was determined that the best way for us to assist in revising and hopefully improving the plan for all of us was to just take a Word version of it and start adding, deleting, revising, retooling, instead of the district's representatives listening to our ideas at the table and then trying to relay those to others. After the district shared an editable version of the plan with us, we worked diligently and doggedly for many, many hours over the process of 3 days, including staying up all night, just to revise the 39-page plan as soon as possible, since we were to have it done by Thursday, July 16th, when we met with the district again. We shared our revised version with the district last Thursday, and we presented it with the understanding that not every single revision or idea would be accepted, but with the understanding that some definitely would be, and possibly numerous would be. Sadly, after the hours and hours of our hard work, not a single revision, idea, or suggestion made it into the plan that the board is voting on tonight. As a matter of fact, it is the same plan as it always has been. There has not been a single change to the plan the board is voting on tonight since it was originally given to us on July 6th and 7th, or since it was originally made public on July 7th. However, near the end of our Thursday session, we were told not to worry at that point because the plan could still be changed before the board meeting. We were told the plan could still be revised before the board meeting on Tuesday, July 20th. That, as a matter of fact, it could even be changed up until the very meeting. Yesterday, July 20th, we did meet with the district again, and we were informed that the district still did not have a revised version of the plan. They informed us that the original 39-page plan is what was going to be voted on by the board. We were told there might be some changes mentioned during the presenting of the plan during the board meeting, but the plan was still the same plan we've all seen previously, no changes. Since we have zero in writing as to what those changes might be, we have no idea exactly what to expect, if anything. We also have no clue how the district presumes to explain changes, but then vote in a plan that does not include those verbal changes. At this time, MUTA believes the best thing the board can do is vote to officially start the year with distance learning, which would basically be a formality at this point, since we are on the state's watch list. After that, the board should then table the vote on the reopening plan. It can be revised and voted on at their next meeting. With this, teachers will then officially know to prep for distance learning to start the year, and students and families will know this definitively as well. MUTA is doing our very best to work with the district, but this is made extremely difficult by their lack of reciprocity and lack of transparency. It is also made extremely difficult when people play fast and loose with the English language. What we have experienced so far is not input. Yes, somebody is sitting in a room with us while we speak, but nothing we say or do or write or communicate is actually being input into the reopening plan. I will leave you with the same analogy that I put forth to the district lawyer just yesterday, actually Thursday. If I ask you every night of your life for a year what you would like to have for dinner, and you tell me every single night that you would like to have a hamburger, and not a single one of those nights I give you a hamburger, at the end of the year, do you feel like you had input? Thank you.
Thank you. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Yes. So AMACE this evening, I wanted to take a moment, and I know the meeting has started with a lot of thank yous, but I just wanted to take a time to thank a few different people. So first, no matter what decisions are made tonight, the board is in a difficult position because no one solution is going to make everybody happy with where we're going. And so there's different and varied opinions. So I just wanted to thank the board for taking on this charge and making these decisions at this time. I wanted to take a moment to thank Angela and the bargaining team for taking time to be here over the summer and to work. And we may not always agree on everything, but being the union president or bargaining team is an unpaid position. So them taking the time to do these things is greatly appreciated. And then on top of that, I just wanted to congratulate all of our new administrators, Jordan Holmes, moving from Marysville High School over to be the vice principal at Kynoch, as well as Eric Preston moving back to Arboga, and Derek Morrison being promoted up to principal at Kynoch. So thank you to everybody, and congratulations.
Thank you. Supervisory unit. Public comment. For teleconference meetings, please submit public comment cards located on the district webpage, www.njusc.com, under board, before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during the specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per Board Bylaw 9323. The Ralph and Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.8 states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except the members of the legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. So we actually have three categories of public comments tonight, and one with reopening the school is very significant. So in our board bylaws, earlier when I read the portion of it said comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input. Our board bylaws state, with board consent, the president may increase or decrease the time allowed for public presentation, depending on the topic and the number of persons wishing to be heard. What I would like to do is to extend that 20-minute time limit to, let me look how many we have. Looks like we have almost 18 or 19. So what I'd like to do is to extend that from a 20-minute time limit to a 60-minute time limit for each one of the different subject matters. So in order to be able to get consent, what I am going to do is to go down through the board roll call, and it's not a vote. We're just trying to get consent to see if the board would be okay with extending this time limit so we can hear all of the folks that would like to speak to us tonight. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bloom is absent. Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Murray.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. So we have consent. What I'm going to do is to read the name of the public comment. It may take Mr. Williams a minute or two to get you located, and then again, let's see, Mr. Carrion, are you going to be our timer for us? 3 minutes. We're going to go still with 3 minutes, so we're extending the length of time for each one of the categories to 60 minutes, so we can kind of hear all the comments. So our first public comment is Maya Rosales. Maya Rosales?
Hello, yes.
Hi.
May I begin speaking?
Go right ahead. You have 3 minutes.
I'm here to talk to you tonight about academic decathlon. Duke County and MJUSD decided to cut the program for this year and not continue forward with it. As an alumni of the program for 4 years and former captain, I can say that academic decathlon fostered in me a thirst for knowledge as well as an aptitude for critical thinking, study skills, and a work ethic that would continue to serve me after high school, through college, and my career. I'm now at UC Berkeley, and I feel that the education I was offered at Marysville High School did not prepare me for my time at Berkeley. But what did prepare me was academic decathlon. Academic decathlon pushed my limits. It taught me how to face failure head on, how to reapproach problem solving, and how to survive a harsh and rigorous academic environment. 3 years after my last academic decathlon competition, and the county is now postponing the competition for students. I feel that by postponing this competition, they are effectively killing the competition. They're killing the program within our county. I know from experience that for continuity's sake, this program requires that former members spearhead the recruitment process. And by postponing the competition, by not continuing with the competition for this year and canceling it, we are effectively killing off one of the only academic extracurricular program that is offered in this district. We're killing it off and we're failing our students, and I wish that the board would encourage Superintendent Cena and County Superintendent Reveles to reconsider their decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like to say too, as I should have stated earlier, we are hopeful, and thank you for being mindful for that 3 minutes. At the end of 3 minutes, we will turn the mic off, and then we will move on to our next public comment. Mr. Davis, would you mind? Looks like we got one more slip under the door. Our next public comment is Abigail
Whitson. Hi, can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Mr. Cena. You were my principal when I graduated in 2012 from Marysville High School. You probably remember me. I remember you were outside every day waving at all of us. I really loved that. I'm here to talk to you today about academic decathlon. My older brother, Andrew, and I both did this program. And I have pulled up here the mission and vision of Marysville High School. The mission states that you want all students to learn at a high level to ensure college and or career readiness. Your vision says that your learning community members will be lifelong learners who can communicate effectively and think critically. I work in theater. I am a teaching artist in public high schools. I go in and I teach them about Shakespeare and help make it a more fun experience for them. And, you know, I will say, especially I work in theater as well, doing performing arts. I was not ready for that career when I went into college at all. because of the classes, through the classes that I had at Marysville High School. We had no performing arts classes. We had no music classes available to us. But you know where I did get to learn music theory was in academic decathlon. Music is one of the subjects, and it is one of the only ways that a Marysville High School student could learn about music if they want to pursue it as a career. So I would really like you to consider your mission when you're talking about us becoming lifelong learners, because I learned to be a lifelong learner through academic decathlon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next public comment is Zoe Rosales.
Hi, my name is Zoe Rosales, and I'm a rising senior at Marysville High School. I joined the academic decathlon team as a freshman after seeing the positive impact it had on my sister, whom you actually just heard from. Verbalizing the importance of this program in my life is so hard, not only because it's touched me in such profound and multitudinous ways, but because I can't even imagine a counter-argument against it. This program raised kids like me, those whom this district often neglects because we care to learn more about more than the ideal for pH rice farming. As winner of the Alexander Hamilton Scholarship, I was privileged to attend a week-long summer program amongst the brightest students in this country. Even though we're all low-income students of similar backgrounds, I was shocked at how different our experiences have been in the public education system. Theirs were of college and career preparedness, academic counseling, and a robust selection of rigorous AP courses. I, on the other hand, have only had myself and academic decathlon to rely on. The holistic yet in-depth curriculum has filled the many educational needs of which I and my fellow decathletes have been deprived. I've gained an appreciation for the arts and invaluable cultural insights that Eurocentric textbooks would never bother to teach me. One of the main concerns for continuing to support this program despite the pandemic is lack of participation, but as a student myself, I can assure you this claim is baseless. After months of distance learning to stay at and stay at home orders, students have been more anxious to fill their time than ever. Academic decathlon is unique in that it's one of very few activities that can be done from home. The lack of sports and clubs that comes with distance learning would free up ample time for students to engage in enriching programs like ours. To cut off yet another academic outlet for students at this time would stifle intellectual curiosity, which I would argue is the very aim of going to school. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next,
we have Angela Spiegel. Angela? Trying to collect myself a little bit here. As many of you know, I have been the coach of the Marysville High School Academic Decathlon team for 19 years. In that time, we have earned 16 Yuba County championships and 3 state championships. My passion for academic decathlon is matched, or actually, as you've just noticed, exceeded only by my team members and their alumni. We have represented our school, our district, our city, and our county with the utmost dignity, honor, and respect. We have been ambassadors for Marysville High School, for Marysville Joint Unified School District, for the city of Marysville, and for Yuba County for 19 years. Yuba County Office of Ed has decided to eliminate, or what they're saying is postpone, academic decathlon for this year. And they say they have done so with the full support and concurrence of the superintendent and the district. My students and alumni started a letter writing campaign. And I was actually going to sit back and let that play out because I wanted you all to see that they were fighting for their program. Not that I was fighting for it, but that they were fighting for it. And that was fine until a letter came out saying that I had actually concurred with this, that I provided feedback saying that it was okay. And that never happened. That is a gross mischaracterization of a phone call that I received from the county 2 minutes before I received an email informing me that the program was being postponed or eliminated for the year. I didn't concur. I didn't agree. I actually fought. I begged. I pleaded to save my program and was told the decision had already been made. So now I am begging again for Marysville Joint Unified and for our school district to save this program. If you postpone it or eliminate it for this year, it will most certainly disappear. And so we need our district to support us in this. This is a program unlike any other, as you have quite obviously seen. And these students need your help desperately. Thank you.
Thank you. So that concludes our public comments for Academic Decathlon. Our next one we have is Cameron Newton. Cameron?
I do not have a phone number, but I don't know if this is the right camera.
My name in there.
Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you very much.
Thanks. I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank, I know there's a lot of tough feelings about this COVID situation in school and distance learning and stuff. And I'd just like to thank Superintendent Cena, my children's teachers and administrators for the wonderful communication that we had as we started this back in March and went through. We have fabulous teachers in our district. And I just, as a parent, would like to express my appreciation. I know everybody oftentimes wants to complain about things and harp on the negative, and this is a horribly difficult situation to be in. But I, for one, appreciate the communication that I have received, the emails, the phone messages, and the positive feedback. So. Thank you for all that you guys are doing and the communication, and keep that up. And this is a definitely a tough situation to try to work through. But I just wanted to make sure that you understood that at least I appreciate your efforts.
Thank you very much, Mr. Newton. Next, we're going to start our public comments regarding the reopening of school. Our first public comment is from Molly McKay.
It looks like she's just joined, but her audio is not working.
So we know.
I hear on there, but I don't see any audio. I don't see a microphone.
Should we go on to the next? Try to come back to Molly.
Can I just tell her?
Yeah.
Molly, if you can hear, it does not look like your microphone is connected. You'll want to connect the microphone and then let them know if you reconnect.
Okay, so we'll come back to Molly. Our next one is Seven Heng Yang.
Hello. Hi. I'm not sure if you guys can hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. Yes, I have a second grade daughter over at Ella, and I just wanted to kind of voice some of my concerns as a parent. I understand back in March, you know, COVID was kind of a sporadic, you know, very unexpected situation, and the school wasn't prepared, teachers weren't prepared, parents were not prepared. But I kind of, you know, we're a little bit ways from March, and here we are still face head to head with COVID. And I, as a parent, I feel like I have no reassurance that truly the district has maybe my child and our best interests at heart. And I say that with a little bit of, you know, I guess maybe it's not the nicest way to put it either. But I feel like as a parent going into the school year, there are no plans, there's no answers as to how we're going to approach this. And if we are, you know, obviously we're going to start with distance learning. However, there's no plan on, last year I struggled with having resources for my kid. A lot of it was, like I said, unexpected, but there were no resources provided to parents to kind of help them teach their child at home. I don't mind teaching, but a lot of it is, you know, teachers, they have lesson plans, they're able to work with their kids in class, but that's not something we were furnished or provided with, and it made it really, really difficult as a parent to be able to work with my child. I certainly did not go to school to be a teacher. It's not to say I can't try to be one, which is our current situation here. And I feel like the district, I'm crossing my fingers that we're not failed for this year. Because, you know, truthfully, and like a lot of families that I know that also have kids in the district, we're stuck looking for pulling our kids out of the district and homeschooling them. Because we have no reassurance as parents that we're going to be helped. We don't have any plans. The district hasn't told us what they're going to do to help the parents teach our kids at home. And to me, that is scary. And then hearing from Muta that they've kind of disregarded their commentary, what people other than their teachers are going to have their best interests at heart other than me? And that kind of makes me upset as a parent too, that they've been, you know, disregarded. And there's poor preparation then because of the unexpectedness, but I feel like there is a little bit less of a leeway for poor preparation now. So I want to hear from the district what they're going to do for me as a parent and what they're going to do for my child to help me keep them in school. Otherwise, I feel like I'm left pulling her out of school and enrolling her. What's the difference if I'm going to have to do the legwork?
For- Jay, I didn't mean to interrupt. That is the end of your 3 minutes. And
okay, thank you for that's fine.
Your comment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Jennifer Reichel. Okay, there is a comment here that I will read. The reopening of the Marysville MGUSD, specifically Foothill Intermediate. We want the school to reopen as normal while providing the option to do independent studies for any who are uncomfortable with returning to school. I feel it is hurting our kids and society far more by either doing distance learning or trying to resume school with so many regulations. The best thing for our kids is to resume school as usual. Our next, we have Rebecca Stout. Rebecca Stout, are you there? No. Our next public comment, Ashley DeVore. Ashley, are you there? The next public comment is Dan and Heidi Menard. Dan and Heidi Menard. No. Did we come back and is Molly McKay?
Still no microphone.
Okay. Wendy Montoya. Wendy Montoya. Hello, Wendy. Next, we have Martha C. Bunn.
And she should be coming on here in just a sec.
I'm here.
Hi, Martha.
Hello. Thank you for
we're
the time.
Here. We can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go right ahead.
All right, fine, thank you. I am a grandparent of a student at Foothill. She's been at Loma Rica Elementary School since kindergarten. I have been a teacher, an administrator, a parent, student. Now I'm a grandparent of a public school student. I feel like I've been in public schools my entire life and it's a long life. I'm 77. So I know some stuff about public schools. I know the difficulty that you and the teachers and the classified staff and the administrators are facing. It is absolutely incredible. And I applaud your work. I'm glad I'm not in it anymore, except that I am because my granddaughter is my ward. What I'd like to address is how to keep the teacher's incredibly important role in the student's education going forward with distance learning. If we only needed books and videos worksheets, distance learning would be a snap. You just hand out the information and you wait for it to come back in, and you grade it and you assign the next one. But we know that that's not what the important thing about teachers. Teachers are connectors between the world of adults and the world of children. They are guides as well as our parents, as the parents are. The very best teacher that I ever had, Dudley Igo, told me as I was preparing to be a teacher that teachers really teach themselves. And what I understood that to mean was that they teach the passion they have about learning. They teach their information about the learning. They teach their personality. They teach who they are. They teach how important it is to have a community understanding and be part of a community. So as we go into distance learning, which I agree is absolutely important right now, I would not send my granddaughter, to school at this point. It's too dangerous. But as we go into distance learning, I urge you and the administrators and the teachers, counselors, and everybody involved to try to figure out how to keep those connections between students and teachers going forward. Teachers don't teach, they teach children. How can they manage the techniques of distance learning to open up those contacts, to pay attention to individual students?
Thank you, Ms. Buck. That is the end of your 3 minutes, and thank you very much for your comment.
Thank you.
Next, we have Billy Ryan and Josephine McCall. So, Billy Ryan or Josephine McCall? Next, we have Patrick Baker. Patrick Baker.
There was a Patrick earlier that dropped off, but I'm not going to come back on.
No, I wonder if they're thinking, they're tuning back in once we get further down the agenda. There's so many of them.
I'm going to keep an eye out. That's my team, the ones that didn't show up separate here, and I just try to keep looking to see if any of them pop in. I'll do my best.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Next, we have Denise Delisle. Had a comment here. Topic, I am trying to get to someone. I can tell that Peter and Elementary put my daughter on a contract because they felt I was going back to my pathway. To those people at the board meeting, how dare you use my path against me, and how dare how dare you do not to think we are really sick. Well, I told you I never felt how I felt, and she was sick too, to these certain people. I told you we were sick, and you still put us on a contract unfairly and unjustly. Now that people are dying from this, you believe me now? We do not deserve to be on a contract for my six-year-old daughter. Also, to whatever teacher was doing intervention class for you to make my daughter hold her urine by telling her if you use the restroom, you will lose your recess. That I intend to bring to the highest level of NJUSD.
Result.
Next.
My name is available now.
Who?
Molly McKay is
the remote. Molly. Molly McKay, are you there?
I am. Wow, that was stressful getting here, though. Whew.
Well, I'm sure glad you made it, Molly. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm a teacher at Kynoch School, and I just want to say very briefly, I've been thinking about this a lot, but my stress level of trying to get in kind of messed my brain around. So the important thing I want to say is that, our schools, like our government, we're by the people, for the people, of the people, the people are our precious children, our teachers and our staff. governed by yourselves and our local administration, of course. We're by the people. That would be the folks who in the early years of our republic chose to establish universal education, right? And we're for the people. That encompasses the entire population of the country, which relies on us to safely educate and prepare the children to be informed and active members of our society. So the thing is we all know that the best way for kids to learn is 5 days a week at school. But in the current environment that we're in with the pandemic raging, we need to put people before economic concerns. You know, when the founders talked about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, life came first. That's what we need to care about, is the lives of the people, not the kids. Like everybody knows, they're not likely to suffer that much, but their relatives who are vulnerable, and the teachers who are vulnerable, and others who really want to be at school but also want to live. So I'm just saying, please put the people before the money, okay? Please.
Thank you very much. Next we have Reagan Elrod.
Yes, hello.
Hi. You're right. Hi.
Okay, my name is Reagan Elrod, and I have two children attending school in our district, one at Browns Valley Elementary and one at Foothill. And safety is absolutely the biggest concern I have when it comes to sending the kids back to school. In my opinion, there are multiple ways we can keep the kids safe in an in-person learning environment. Every plan I have heard is complicating the situation more and more by taking extra measures. By taking extra measures, washing hands, using hand sanitizer every time you leave and return from the classroom, wiping down surfaces and spacing desks out for safer distances would make the school cleaner than it has ever been before. And all of those tasks are easy to do. Keep it simple. Stop overcomplicating something that isn't that complicated. The kids will learn to keep things clean and stay safe. The main argument I have is, how is school not considered essential? If anything is essential, school is. Socialization is. Being around peers and learning in an in-person environment is 100% essential. The district sent out an extremely vague survey months ago when COVID first happened on what parents would like to do for their children's education for the coming school year. Send that survey again that actually has some detailed information. What will distance learning look like? What will in-person learning look like? You can't expect to get a true response on what parents think is best for their child if no real description of either option is accurately presented. While I understand that last year's distance learning program was rushed and unexpected, it was not great. My girls' teachers, as I'm sure the majority of all teachers in our district, did a wonderful job, and I am not wanting to state anything otherwise. They did a great job with what they had to work with and the model they had to work with. But it was not a successful learning experience. I do not want my kids to be on a computer all day as if they are already working in a cubicle office setting. It is not good for the kids. We need a better description of what the distance learning model will look like. How will it be structured and how will it be executed? The Google Classroom model was very difficult to follow, especially for the families that live in the foothills that don't have the great internet service. I believe if a new survey was sent out, you would find that many parents would like to move forward with distance learning for the time being, and many would like their kids to return to school in person. How can we proceed with any kind of plan with not knowing what those numbers will be? If half of the parents are already planning to go with the distance learning model, that solves the class number size issue, and parents that feel that it's best for their kids to have in-person instruction can move forward with that plan. On a final note, the models that have been presented, such as kids go on a two-day-a-week rotation or an AM-PM rotation, seems very unpractical and extremely difficult, especially for working families. At least 1 week on and 1 week off with the distance learning would allow the kids some normalcy.
Delra, I do need to cut you off there. It was the end of your 3 minutes.
No, I'm done. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Our next comment is from Reenie. Bear with us, we're going to get you pulled up there. Can't unmute her? Which would they need to unmute their own phone?
They are on a computer, so they may be able to unmute themselves so she can hear us.
Rita, can you hear us? Can you unmute your computer? We will come back and see if we can get that a little bit later. Our next comment is Angela Spiegel. Angela?
Hello?
Mr. Rasmussen? Mr. Rasmussen, if it's okay with you, I can go ahead and wait and go at the very end. I don't need to go right now. We can have other people that need a voice at this point in time and need the time more than I do.
Hello.
Okay, Remy, go right ahead. We have you up there.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, we can.
We just want to say that. Well, good afternoon to everybody, and thanks for the great work that you guys are doing. We just want to say that, you know, we don't have only one kid. We have several kids, and it's totally extremely dangerous to be sending the kids to school, and then they will come back bringing whatever they're going to be bringing. And at home, we have people with conditions, low immune system, and so forth. And it would be totally not acceptable for them to be going back and forth and to bring in anything, and we end up, and then the whole family will be doomed once one gets it. We appreciate the effort that you're making to open the schools, but for us as a family, at this point, it's not acceptable to be in a classroom setting. Distance learning will be the best option until it's safe to, you know, for the pandemic to be resolved with the immunizations and so forth for the kids. It's very, very complex situation for us because we are a large family. We have small kids. We have seniors with very serious conditions, and even family members that are not seniors with low immune system. It will be a total disaster for us to go that route. We appreciate the option that they're giving distance learning until the time comes that it's safe. Otherwise, we will do whatever we can to make sure that our kids attend the distance learning. If that's not the option for us, that has to be the only option for health reasons. I hope you guys understand that, and we will appreciate that it will be always open for all of us. Like I said, we have several kids; it's not only one. And then for that reason, it's dangerous. One or the other will bring, and not only for our kids, the teachers too. You know, the kids can take the disease to the classroom setting, and we know that teachers have family members also with a low immune system and all that. We've been listening to the teachers' organizations and the unions, and they all say the same concerns that we have. So we are on this together. This is something that it's not easy to control, and it's not easy to say, oh, let's just do it and whatever. The politicians can demand whatever they want to demand, but I ask, are they sending their kids to public schools? No. They have a private tutor in a private school of their home. Great that our governor and everybody else standing up tall for us in that sense. Thanks for the great work that you guys are doing. And if you need anything for
thank you very much, Randy. Thank you very much for your comment.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you for the great work.
And bye now.
Bye.
Next we have Nikki Nakamura. Nikki Nakamura. Thank you.
Hi, good evening, everybody. I want to just thank you for the opportunity of letting the public take up so much of your time today. And I know that our board and Mr. Cena are working so hard along with MUTA to get this mess sorted out. And I mean, a mess is probably the best word to use. And I am coming on today both as a parent and a teacher, and I was really torn on how to, which direction to take in this. And I could probably speak for an entire hour on both sides as to how to help make this a successful return to school. But because I have to sort of choose one direction, I'm really speaking on behalf of a reaction to the proposed reopening in the 39-page document that was sent out. And just a little thing about my own personal family is I have 5 school-age children being schooled by Marysville Joint Unified, ranging from the elementary, middle school, and high school, but also adding in a child who has severe special needs, which is being educated by the county. And so with that, my personal need is speaking from a parent standpoint in the logistical nightmare that the proposed plan is going to present for. I know that my family is a unique family, but in speaking for families that have more than one child, the differing elementary, middle school, high school schedules that are being presented, the different tracks, pods, whatever, being presented. If I have a child, getting all 5 of my children on the same schedule, the same routine, not to mention the same routine as the children who are of the family that babysits my special needs child. Logistically, for every working family or not working family, that is going to be a logistical nightmare. And the late arrival, early pickup, whatever it may be, sneaking in a teacher standpoint, if you have a kindergartner and a 6th grader at the same school, that 6th grader is going to be continually signed out. I just cannot speak to leaving this, my 3 minutes with, it is my asking for you to please, yes, I understand that we have to start with social distancing, but, please, don't make a decision tonight. Give us time so you guys can make.
Thank you for your comments. That is the end of your 3 minutes. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Next we have Carmi Ellerton.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Go right ahead. We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all for all that you're doing. I do appreciate your time and completely understand that it's an extremely difficult situation we are in. I do echo the sentiments of some of the other parents that I have heard on this call, and thank you for your comments. In regards to the reopening plan, it was my understanding that you had been meeting with the teachers and that you also asked for input from us as parents. After hearing the MUTA's report just now, I feel extremely discouraged that teacher input isn't being heard, which simultaneously makes me very worried that as a parent that our voice won't be heard or isn't going to be heard. Teachers, in my opinion, are the most important voice we have, as they are the ones that are going to be instructing and working directly with our students and my children. Their input should be vital and consider to be of the highest priority. Moving forward, I hope that you will be able to tell us changes and updates that you have made to this reopening plan based upon your discussions and input from the teachers and also from the feedback that you've received from parents. In regards to the current cohort model suggestions, I really hope you're considering different options and fully getting teacher input. Also, I hope that you're considering the parents and how their schedule and getting their children to and from school
will be affected. Teachers, again, are our experts here, and I hope you are relying fully on their opinion. I know that there's no one perfect solution, but certainly a more shared and collaborative solution can be met. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ellison. Next, we have a comment from Kim Hutton. Kim, are you there, or would you want?
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you, Ms. Hutton.
Thank you for taking the time and listening to all of us tonight. I'm writing in and calling as a parent of three children in elementary school, as well as a school employee. And I'm just want to say that the governor's pandemic plan for the Learning and Safe Schools Section 5 states, under newly enacted state law, school districts are required to provide devices and connectivity so that every child can participate in the distance learning. Section 1 states that our local public health official may grant a waiver for the elementary schools to reopen in person if the waiver is requested by the district superintendent. In the Foothill communities, the internet connection is a huge problem still, as was during our last distance learning. Many families do not have connections even with the hotspots that were made available. Some families who do have the internet connection have unreliable connections and can't support multiple students being connected at the same time. Governor Newsom said that learning is non-negotiable and should never stop, and that is so true. However, this is not feasible to uphill in our Foothill communities with the resources that our students have here. The internet requirement simply can't be met. Therefore, I propose that a waiver be requested and granted for Yuba Feather, Dobbins, Loma Rica, Cordova, and Browns Valley Elementary School to reopen with in-person instruction. As is our motto, it's every student, every day. We have to take care of every one of those students. And going forward, if the students up here do not have internet, we are not taking care of them. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Feather. Next public comment is Coach. Coach, are you there?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, I would like to talk about electives and how is that going to be handled for middle school and high school students who have to be in different classes. They can't be in the same cohort because they're not choosing all the same electives. So how are we going to keep those students separate? How is that going to be handled? Are electives going to just be foregone for the year? The other thing I would like you guys to address is to give us as parents some reassurances of how distance learning is going to take place. I thought it was really haphazardly, understandably, the way it was done before. But this time around, I think teachers should be able to be a little bit more prepared. And I, as a parent, should feel confident that my children are going to actually be learning something and being taught by their actual teachers, not various YouTube videos that the teachers may send out. So I would like that to be addressed. And if there could be some certainty for us, so that way we as parents can make a decision whether to just homeschool our children to give them some continuity of learning or feeling confident of sending them back to school, whether it be through distance learning or on-site learning. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Billy Newton. Billy Newton. Billy Newton, are you there?
Yes, sir. Political leadership that we.
He's on, but
her audio must not be working. She's unmuted and we can't hear her.
We do not, we can't hear you, Billy. Billy, as you work on that, we're going to go ahead and go to our next one, then I'll come back to you. The next public comment is B. Chong. We have no B. Chong. Next, we have Christopher Chilton. Christopher Chilton, are you there?
I am.
Go right ahead. Next, we have Christopher Chilton. Christopher Chilton, are you there?
I am.
I am.
Sound, can you turn down the YouTube in the background? Christopher Chilton. Christopher Chilton, are you there?
I am.
I am.
Sound, can you turn down the YouTube in the background?
Okay,
go ahead and give it a try.
It seemed
like I had a lot of feedback there, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, I turned it down.
Oh, okay, go right ahead.
Honestly, this should be the parent's choice. I have three sons in elementary, one going to preschool. I'm not a preschool teacher. I have one going to first grade, I have one going to seventh grade. My problem is I don't know if he's ready for seventh grade because I had to teach him. But then he got passed on to seventh grade. I got one that got passed on to first grade. I don't know if he's ready for first grade. Because I had to teach him. If you want to have your kids in independent studies, that should be your choice. I feel like my kids learn better in the classroom. And that should be my decision. I get what the governor's saying. But he sends his kids to private school. I can't afford that. And some most people can't afford that. And some people can't afford daycare. School is their daycare. Unfortunately. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chilton. Let's go back to Billy Newton. Mr. Crawford, it seems like we're getting some background noise coming from your microphone.
Still cannot hear Billy.
Still no Billy
then? No. If she wants to try calling into the phone number, maybe that would work.
Billy, if you want to try calling into the phone number, maybe we can hear you. While we're waiting, that is the end of our public comments. Angela Spiegel. We'll come back. Was there something that you would like to add, Angela?
Mr. Rasmussen, the only thing that I was going to add, and I knew there was going to be something I was going to forget under my muted time, which is why I submitted the public comment card, so thank you. The only thing that I really did want to reiterate is something that we have talked with the district about and something that the teachers themselves have all talked about amongst small groups and large groups, and especially with the parents voicing their concerns. It's just the fact that the distance learning that we are preparing for the opening of school is not and will not be the distance learning of the spring. We do know that we still have connectivity issues and we know the district is trying to work through those. I did hear the one parent mention that. And so we know we still have some work to do there, but just to try to reiterate to people that teachers are working hard, school sites are working hard, and the district is working hard to make sure and guarantee that the distance learning that we are gearing up for and preparing for is not the same as the distance learning that we did in the spring. We are talking about student accountability. We are talking that students will be held accountable for attendance and academically as well, and that teachers are much more prepared. We have a lot more notice this time around than we did last time. We had about 18 hours notice last time. And so we have a lot more time, and teachers have done a lot of professional development on their own. There's been a lot of collaboration amongst teachers there, again, in small groups and large groups. And so we are working very hard to make sure that distance learning, we know it is mandated right now, but that distance learning will be very different. And one of the other things that we also wanted to mention is that regardless of anybody's political leans or political take on anything, is just the idea that we desperately need Marysville Joint Unified teachers, parents, students, we desperately need our community's help in getting our students back into our classrooms part-time or full-time. We need our community's help in that. And we know that we've got differences of opinion about masks and social distancing versus no mask and no social distancing, but we desperately need our community's help right now so we can get our students back in our classrooms where they belong, where we want them. You know, we have a passion for this. That's why we, you know, choose this profession. But we need our community's help because we don't want to have a repeat of last spring where we have, you know, monumental life events that have to be changed, altered, postponed, canceled. We don't want to see that heartache again. We don't want to go through that. And so I did just want to reiterate those two points. And so I do thank you for the additional time. And hopefully we can all work together to find a way through this. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Billy. Yes, I did see a flash on the screen. Let's see. Billy
Newton,
are you there?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, great. I am calling on behalf of my daughter. She is at home at dinner time dealing with three children under five. The question she has is, if a student or a teacher tests positive for COVID-19, what is the protocol for our students and teachers that have come into contact with the person? And are there enough subs to cover if it is a teacher or the whole situation?
So, those are great comments. We cannot respond to any of the comments during this time.
I understand that.
So, any comments that you would like to make, we're certainly here to listen to those.
No, she just had those two questions for you. You know, as it stands, she has, you know, like I said, she's got a 6-month-old, a 2-year-old, plus the 5-year-old that's going to be going into kindergarten. And she has a high-risk husband who, you know, they really can't take the chance of their daughter bringing home anything like this. I mean, it could be detrimental to any, you know, to the family. So, you know, that's a big concern for her. And it is a fear for all of us in the family that this, you know, is a possibility.
Right. I completely understand. And thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Williams, do you by chance see any of the ones that we missed?
I've gone through them all and I do not see anybody on.
Okay, so we're going to conclude
comments. I wanted to talk.
We'd like to say thank you to all the folks that called in and
I filled out the comment card. Why don't I get to talk?
Can you tell us who you are?
Hi, my name is Trish. Yes, Patricia Short. I'm a parent here in Marysville, Pinox.
Well, I'm trying to find your public comment card, so if you can wait just a moment.
Yeah, no problem.
Can you maybe help us? When did you submit the public comment card?
With Lisa yesterday. Lisa at the superintendent's office.
Okay.
I printed it out as well. Confirmation that my public comment was received.
Do you you have a date and time on that? I'm going to give you your fine.
Was yesterday. I don't have a time. No. Anyways, can I just make a couple of comments since we're already talking, or?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm a single mom. I have two kids at Kynoch. One was in fourth, going into fifth. One was in kindergarten, now going into first. I agree with Mr. Chilton. I personally don't know if my kindergarten's ready for first grade, let alone, you know, how do we know that they passed? I don't know. Excuse me. But with all that being said, I understand the concerns of safety and people who are at risk, and it's dangerous, and that's fine. That should be an option. At home learning should be an option for those who don't want to do school in person or who have those medical issues that put them at risk, or family members, yada, yada. However, on the contrary, it also should be an option for those of us who don't have the ability to stay home. Like me, I work full time, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. I don't have the option to stay home. When we did this last round of distance learning here at home, just look at all the issues we've had with this call. You can't hear people, you can't, you know, audios, mics, this, that, and the other. It was beyond frustrating. I feel like it caused tensions in my household to rise. I don't feel like there was much learning done by my children. I know the teachers were doing the very best they could with the short notice, and everybody had a different, you know, internet connection and the ability to do what. I just think that we should have the option to send our kids to school. For those that don't want to, stay home. Don't do it. But for those that don't have the option, our kids need to go to school. That's all. I guess that's all.
Okay, thank you very much for your comment.
Thank you for letting me speak.
Moving on in the agenda, next we have the superintendent's report.
Together, serving every student, every day, in every way. Tonight's board meeting is to prepare for the reopening of the 2020-21 school year and discuss the MDUSD's 2021 school reopening plan. The central part of any reopening plan, any of the three instructional models throughout this pandemic, is distance learning. And tonight, first of all, in the consent agenda, there are a few items that really help with distance learning and with learning loss. And these ideas were generated by teachers, tools for teachers, for students to help strengthen the instruction in this generation of distance learning and in all learning. That's Passport, MyOn, and Lexia. Those are three consent agenda items. Also tonight, we're going to review the budget reduction timeline as we travel through this journey, which began for many of us March 17th when we closed schools, and we've been on this journey together. As we're looking ahead, we also know that one of the obstacles, challenges on our way is the budget, state budget, the national economy, world economy, and that planning for that beyond next year for. Because we already had a structural deficit, and what the strategy is to serve students in the current plan, and what's best for the future. So involving stakeholders at all levels, that'll be presented and voted on tonight. In addition, at the end of the meeting, we want to discuss the plan. With all the input that we received and all the conversation, and then the state's order this past Friday, there's a lot to process and to collaborate and to distill into a plan that
that is best for MJUSD. And so, what I'd like to do is I'd like to thank all the stakeholders. It's been mentioned tonight with the July 7th draft plan. We've had over 600 comments. Those comments have been reviewed by all the board members, all the management team members, and reviewed. And thank you for your input. As well as with NUTA, this summer has been we've been all hands on deck and every day working with the next level of information, the next challenges, trying to work through them. And so thank you for all of your time over the summer, and also your ideas and input in making the best plan. We will work together to make the best plan we can. And also thank you with site administrators and directors. I'm not sure many people have had summers this summer. And so all the hard work and dedication and working toward, with 3 weeks to go when we start school, that everyone has put in the groundwork to spring load and once we set a direction and we're moving forward to make everyone successful. And teachers and stakeholders for braving this summer, the uncertainty, we hear it in the voices tonight, and we all face that, but thank you for, as we just heard, that with teachers building capacity over the summer and making great use of the professional development days to build capacity, particularly for distance learning, and again, the center of all instructional models. And then also thank you to our athletes over the summer. Yesterday, CIF, the California Interscholastic Federation, announced that the start of high school sports season is now pushed off to the beginning for practice for fall sports until December 14th. And so that season will go from December to April. And then with football, that season will go from January 8th into April. So what they're doing is they're having three sports in two seasons containing three sports over the second semester of the year. And for now, athletes have been working out, and they've been doing a wonderful job of modeling for us, being a barometer, being a test case for a lot of the health and safety protocols. And so we appreciate the effort and sacrifices that they've made, as well as we all learn to handle these health and safety protocols in practice. And to echo what was just shared, that all of us working together is what will buy freedom for us to attend school. So together, serving every student every day in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Seaman. Next, we have the approval of minutes. We have the minutes from the regular board meeting of 6:23:20, and the minutes from the special board meeting of 6:30:20. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second, Paul Allison.
Second by Mr. Allison. Roll call vote, Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boom, absent. Trustee Allison.
Yes, aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmus, again, motion carries. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that a board member would like to have pulled?
Yes.
What item?
On, let's see, student discipline and attendance, number one. I have a couple questions.
Can you tell us what page, Ms. Brown?
page 5.
Oh, there's no page numbers. Oh, I can't see the page number. I wrote over it. Hang on.
Page 5. So, page 5, you want to pull student discipline and attendance, number 1?
Yes.
Yes?
That's for me, Jolie Critchfield. Hello. It's for the past program.
Jolie, we don't need any input right yet. Thank you. Are there any other items that somebody would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve the consent agenda with the exception of item 1, discipline and attendance.
Okay, we have a motion to approve by Mr. Crawford.
I'll second.
Is that Mr. Ellison?
Yes.
Sorry.
Mr. Allison, second. Roll call vote. Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone is absent. Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Motion carries. Now we have student discipline and attendance, number 1. 2020-21 Probation School Success Path Program Agreement. Purpose of the agenda item is to request board approve the agreement with the Probation School Success Path Program for 2021 school year. Mr. Allison, what's your question?
Okay, I have 2 questions. One is, okay, the $300,000 plus that we're spending here, when I was at Foothill, now I really appreciate this program. I really love the probation officer that we had there, and I think that she did a fantastic job with kids. But when I was teaching, I remember that the schools paid for it. You know, we paid for that probation officer, or our percentage, we shared her with 2 other schools. So I'd like to know how that has changed. And the other question I have is, you know, with the schools closed, what are these probation officers going to be doing? Are they going to be going out and talking to kids that, like a truancy officer, or what will their role be when the schools are closed? Thank you.
Okay. I'll go ahead and answer that. So the school sites are paying for that out of their site funds. That is still continuing. And actually, we are going to utilize them with boots on the ground because we're going to need a lot of outreach with a lot of families that may be having a hard time logging on or, you know, troubleshooting through, you know, the Google Classroom or whatever that is. So at the end of last year, we did go out and do some home visits. Those were reported by teachers. This time we're able to see which kids are not participating so we can make sure that they know what to do so they don't lose any learning time. So it is.
What does it say here that this is paid for by the school?
It's site discretionary. It says for their general fund edit, it's site discretionary funds through their school site.
I guess I missed that.
Yeah, it's okay.
Thanks.
The one question I have, this is Randy Davis. Is why is McKinney Intermediate $113,000? Is it almost $20,000 above any of the other?
Well, each officer, yeah, they pay for the actual officer. So the officer that is at McKinney School has more years at probation. So the longevity, his pay is more. So,
and this includes the retirement and their benefits and everything.
It does.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion on that item? Is there a motion?
I'll move
motion
that we
approve it.
I'll second that.
I'll second that.
Who made the motion?
I did. Fleury.
Mr. Fleury. Motion by Mr. Fleury to approve. And a second by Ms. Scott.
Correct.
Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone is absent. Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
And Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Motion carried. I would like to just remind our board members about our approved protocols to be agreed upon. To be sure, if you have any questions on the agenda items, to be sure and contact Mr. Cena prior to the meeting to make sure staff has all the information that you need. So under new business, Buildings and Grounds Department. Change order number one, but Weston Engineering Contractors for the Alder Site Improvement, project number 8198. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board ratify the change order number one with Weston Engineering Contractors, WEDC, for the Alder Elementary School Site Improvement Project in the amount not to exceed $79,950. Is there a motion?
Motion approved.
That motion approved by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Was that Mr. Crawford?
Mr. Fleury.
Mr. Fleury, second. Thank you, Mr. Fleury. You're okay, welcome. Do we have any discussion on that? Do we have staff?
Yes, it's Travis Barnett, Director of Buildings and Grounds. This is the change order where, you know, we talked about during the 6/23 board meeting with the unforeseen conditions over there at Oliver's Elementary School for doing the hardscape project. This is just to cover the cost of that change order to mitigate the bad soil so the project could continue to move forward.
Thank you. Any questions or discussion from board members?
Yeah, has the work been done yet?
Yes, the work has been done. It's moved forward. That's why we're asking for ratification on this change order. It was necessary to continue construction as we had all the heavy machinery out there, and it was a necessity to continue to move the project forward.
So I will say, Mr. Allison, I drove by there today, and they were going full bore on getting that play yard constructed.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett.
Absolutely.
Roll call vote. Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Allison?
Hi.
Fleury?
Yes.
Ms. Scott?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Rasmussen. Motion carried. Next, we have Child Development Program, Resolution 2020-21-01. 2020-21 Child Development Program Contract. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve a resolution for the following contract with the State Department of Education for the 2021 school year. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Motion. What is your motion, Mr. Fleury?
Yeah, we agree. Let me pass it.
Okay. Mr. Fleury makes a motion to pass it. Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Davis. Do we have staff?
Yes. Good evening. This is Kathy Woods. And just to clarify that this resolution is intended to approve the pre-kindergarten literacy grant that allows us to provide learning materials to facilitate literacy development with our families and their students.
Thank you, Ms. Wood. Any questions or discussion?
Hold on a moment.
Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone Matson? Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yeah.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carried. Child Development Program number two, Resolution 2020-20-02. 2020-21 Child Development Program contract. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution and following contracts with the State Department of Education for the 2021 school year. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second, Allison.
Second by Mr. Allison. Okay, do we have a staff?
Again, I would just like to clarify that these funds are our two contracts that we received from the state to provide our state preschool services for approximately 465 students, and general childcare for our school age program, which is about 50 students that we have that are year round.
Favorite Wood, do we have any questions or comments? Roll call vote, Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Bloom absent. Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carried. Personnel Services, number one, Resolution 2020-21/03, Declaration for Need for Fully Qualified Educators. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution for the declaration of need for fully qualified educator and the annual statement of need for 30-day substitute teaching and designated subject permit for the 2021 school year. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Again, Mr. Fleury, what your motion is?
That we approve this item.
Okay, we have a motion for Ms. Fleury to approve. Do we have a second?
I'll second that. This is Ms. Scott.
Second by Ms. Scott. We have staff. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you, Randy. The item before us is annual, but more importantly, it helps us meet our need, given that on occasion we have subject matter competency to meet, and we have a difficult time finding specific credentialed teachers. So ultimately, this gives us the flexibility through this resolution and ultimately through the passage to use long-term substitutes and sometimes find a credentialed employee who is working outside of his or her credential to meet the needs of this particular site's search for a credentialed and qualified teacher. Recommend that the board approve it so that we can staff accordingly and ensure that our offerings are met with the qualified teachers as best we can.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Do we have any questions or comments from board members?
Hey, I have a quick question, Allison. On our subs, when are we going to start paying them more so that we can attract more of them? We have such a problem getting substitutes.
Well, typically it's part of the negotiated process, and if the district has any inkling as to whether or not it can afford raises, then we'll hammer that out through the negotiating process.
Thank you.
Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone absent. Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carried. Next, business services, number one. Budget reduction timeline. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the budget reduction timeline as discussed during the budget workshop held on 6-9-20. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve
by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second that.
Second by Ms. Scott. Okay, do we have staff?
Okay, I'm muted.
Oh,
you're muted. You're muted.
Sorry about that. Back in January, thank you. Back in January, I shared an overview of the district's ongoing structural deficit in our budget. As a brief reminder, a structural deficit in the budget simply means that the budget's out of balance, less revenues than expenses on an ongoing basis. The result is declining reserves. Reserves may only be used once, then they're gone. In March, COVID-19 hit, and the state's budget has been seriously negatively impacted. School revenue only does as well as the state's revenue because our main funding is based on a percentage of the state's revenues each year. Move forward to the state's enacted budget, and we see a basically flat funded local control funding formula, less COLA, along with some relief from increasing pension costs and some relief from escalating special ed costs with additional special ed funding. We also see a good amount of one-time funds to help with the COVID-19 impact to our schools. The bottom line, when we use up the one-time COVID funds, our multi-year projection still indicates the need for budget reductions effective beginning next year to help balance the district's structural deficit. Fortunately, we have a solid reserve because the board has prudently managed their responsibility to provide a financially stable district budget each year. The budget reduction timeline you're being asked to approve this evening was discussed at the June 9th board budget workshop and follows the same process as described then. And just to quickly reiterate, we're going to develop a survey to present to our stakeholders toward the end of September. We'll have that completed and put out. It may go on the website. And the groups involved would be staff, parents, and community members. Then in early October, we'll collect the data from the survey, cost out the suggestions, and technology and the fiscal department will be helping with that work. Then we'll present the budget reduction suggestions with those costed out associated costs to various groups to prioritize what they feel are priorities as far as the reductions that are collected. And that time frame would be early October or October and early November. And that will involve school sites, perhaps site council, site staff, district advisory committee, which includes the parents on the district advisory committee, our bargaining units, management, cabinet. Then we will present the prioritized list of the budget reductions at the December 15th board meeting to the Board of Trustees as your first look at what those recommendations are and the different priorities that the different groups have given them. Then in January, at the end of January, they will come back to you for approval of whichever you choose to approve. And then if we need a second board meeting to finish the discussion, we would do that the first part of February. And that's a recommended timeline. You know, it could change. And but I think that it's important that we follow this path, even though we did receive or we're supposed to receive a good substantial amount of COVID-19 funds. But again, those are one-time funds. And then the level that we're being funded at this year, which is significantly more than what we adopted with that big reduction in June for our adopted budget, the state's doing that, but then they're deferring a lot of the payment. So they're saying that we're funding you well, but we're not funding you. Literally 32% of our payments will be deferred to the 21-22 fiscal year. So I think this is very prudent. We have solid reserves that allow us the time to go through this process methodically and logically, and you know, it will ultimately bring you some prioritized recommendations for implementing next year.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Allison.
How much, I got distracted here and I think I missed part of your presentation. I was wondering if I missed this. How much input are teachers going to be able to have in helping develop the survey, as opposed, other than just having, who's going to do the survey? Who's going to make the survey?
The survey is simply going to be asking for recommendations. You know, it might include something, people can do recommendations anonymously. It may be something general, like, you know, if you choose to say what area you work in, if you're classified or certificated, you know, if you are a teacher or if you're from a particular site. But there'll also be the ability for people to make recommendations anonymously as well. And then when we collect those, we'll put them into categories. And, you know, because there's different, not everything that's suggested is doable.
Okay, so everyone will have a chance to put input in.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments? I think one of the problems that the state is doing those deferrals, and they just give you a false sense of hope, I think.
Right, in an election year.
Yeah. Any other comments or discussion? We have a motion by Mr. Davis and a second by Trustee Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bones absent. Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Aye.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Next, we have Student Services 2020-21 MJDWC School Reopening Plan. Mr. Fina, do we have staff that's going to present that plan?
Yes, I'm going to kick off and explain first of all why it's under Student Services. And if you're looking at the brochure, this is four pages, condensing a 39-page draft. It's on the website, and board members have a hard copy. And first of all, why it's in Student Services is because all of this that we are doing, the focus is we're trying to prevent the spread of COVID-19 and ensure the safety of our students and our staff. And at the same time, we want to maintain relationships and help students learn and grow. Those are the four key things that we are trying to do. So in this plan, that is the foundation is health and safety. And our instructional programs are a tool of that. And at this point, I'd like to introduce Jessica Guth, our Director of Program Services.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Gary. Our team has utilized multiple sources to develop the draft guide, including the Governor's Executive Order, California Department of Education's Stronger Together, and guidance from California and Yuba County Public Health Departments. In addition to the development of the guide, our team is constantly assessing the risk tolerance to balance high health and safety standards in relation to a rigorous instructional program to determine our reopening strategy. You will see that throughout the plan, we have kept in mind that the more contacts one makes and the longer the interaction, the higher the risk of COVID-19 spread. We will be presenting the many strategies to help lower the risk of COVID-19 exposure and spread during all instructional models. For example, due to the fact that we are on the watch list, the governor has ordered that schools within our county will need to operate in distance learning until we've been off the watch list for at least 14 consecutive days.
Jamie Larson, go ahead and tell us about participation. Oh, you're on mute, Jamie.
Sorry. I want to start by thanking board members and the superintendent who have made my little portion of this presentation super simple, because they have so eloquently expressed at the beginning of their meeting all of their thanks and appreciation for the collective conversations, correspondence, and the collaboration across all stakeholder groups to provide input into our evolving reopening plan. And the district certainly values the input, all of the time, the detail that some folks included when they were providing input into the plan. And all of those comments are being taken into consideration as the document continues to grow, to incorporate all of the health and safety standards that Jessica had mentioned, as well as try to bring in all of the other varying opinions in terms of where we should fall in terms of the reopening. As you heard tonight, public comment really does vary widely across the board, and the district, the principals, all of the directors have worked really hard to not only be aware of those comments, but to incorporate them into the moving forward strategies.
So basically, in the 39 pages, it starts off with the five guiding principles, and that's like the fingers of a hand in order to combat the COVID-19. So social distancing, facial coverings, the hand washing and hand hygiene, the health checks, and disinfecting. So this is like the five fingers that form the fist to knock out COVID. In social distancing, one of the governor's plan on Friday shared that social distancing, all adults on campus were all required 6 feet distance. Students, they wear a mask, grades three up, and that the social distancing, understanding that little kids is running around. Travis?
Yeah, so to kind of cover that part of social distancing, the district has ordered and installed over 90 plexiglass partitions for staff that have direct access to the public. We've also we're installing at various locations, like at the district office, and where necessary at school sites. We're currently working on design and development of social distancing model, utilizing plexiglass dividers between desks at one of our schools. This will give us an insight of what this will look like in the event that this is the direction we must go with social distancing. To further support social distancing in the classroom environment, we've upgraded our HVAC filters to catch more particulates in the air, along with changing the HVAC filters twice as often to ensure maximum filtration. We'll also be keeping HVAC units on continuously to circulate outside air into the buildings.
So social distancing, maintaining that we're 6 feet apart, and when we can't be 6 feet apart, social distancing is our number one tool. That's where the facial coverings come in, so that we protect other people. And what's required is all of us, all adults, are to wear facial coverings. And as I said, students grade 3 through 12 are required. And students in the second grade and below, we're going to work real hard. And they're recommended, and they'll wear masks as often as possible. Brian?
Yeah, so we were able to get a hold of many of the masks that we're going to need for the start of the school instruction, which is going to be an actual ample supply. As far as child masks, we're going to start off with the close to 89,000 masks in stock. And as for the adult masks, we have almost 70,000. So we have enough to cover for several weeks, and we'll be able to replenish as we go forward. And as well as face shields, we've also had the ability to acquire around 10,000 masks as well. So I think we're in a good position.
Thank you.
Do you have a couple of questions?
Number three is hand washing, which we've all heard. That's the number one tool that we've heard since before March. And if you can't wash your hands, we're all to wash our hands when we go in rooms or offices or rooms into rooms. And that they, if we can't wash with water, that we use hand sanitizer with 60% alcohol. And that we practice good hand hygiene, not touching our face, particularly our eyes, our nose, or our mouth. And Brian.
Yeah, so we were able to get more hand sanitizer. We actually got about 1,500 gallons of hand sanitizer in some varieties of gallon pumps and as well as wall-mounted units, which should really help us out. We've also increased our stocks of hand soap, which we bought an additional 300 cases that should cover it. And we've also bought an ample supply of paper towels to ensure that everyone will be able to either wash their hands or use the hand sanitizer.
Jessica.
So, Mr.
Oh, you're on.
Okay, thank you.
Could you just, when we call on different folks, could you either have them tell us what their position is, or could you tell us what the position is for the public?
Yes.
I can start that out. My name is Jessica Guth, and I am the Director of Program Services within the Student Services Department.
Thank you, Jessica.
The fourth essential strategy in ensuring we are not spreading COVID-19 and putting student and staff safety as a priority requires everyone to stay home when appropriate. People who are showing symptoms or who have had close contact with a person with COVID-19 must stay home. Close contact is defined as being within 6 feet or more, 6 feet for more than 15 minutes. As we implement these strategies, we not only have to keep the health and safety of students and staff as our priority, but we also want to keep students able to access instruction as consistently as possible. The California Department of Public Health has recommended that a classroom cohort will go home when there is a confirmed case. When there are multiple cohorts with cases or 5% of the school have positive cases, the entire school would go home and the entire district would go home when 25% of the schools are closed within a 14-day period. By having everyone work together to adhere to staying home when appropriate, we can avoid cohorts, schools, and the district having to go home.
Our Director of Purchasing. Oh, the thermometers.
Okay. So we're doing Travis, are you going to take over the cleaning and disinfecting?
They had a question about the thermometers.
Oh, okay. Shoot. Kind of breaking up. If the quantity of thermometers that we currently have, we have around 250 no-touch thermometers. So that will be an ample supply to be able to take care of the district. We also have enough for each of our school buses, and as well as, I believe it's four thermometers per school. So we have all those in house, and we should be ready to go.
And the fifth item is disinfecting. And Travis Barnett, our Director of Facilities, Maintenance, Grounds, and Custodial.
Thank you, Mr. Cines. Travis Barnett, Director of Buildings and Grounds in short here. As we kind of roll into the disinfecting, we've also got to point out that currently we have gone around the district and we've started installing hand sanitization stations at main points of access, such as MP rooms and offices, and we'll continue to install these hand sanitization stations at school sites district-wide as they become available. So as far as the disinfecting, as stated, you know, we'll continue to hang sanitization stations in each classroom as they become available. Our custodial staff is currently working hard disinfecting areas after public use and staff use. Summer deep cleaning is also taking place along with additional tasks of disinfecting as part of their day-to-day routine. Our custodial staffs are wiping down door handles, desks, restrooms, and many other services. Operationally, we are looking at changing majority of the custodial staff to daytime workers to meet demands of disinfecting and serving our students and staff. Along these additional tasks to ensure proper disinfecting of our school sites, we're working towards ensuring each classroom has access to disinfecting supplies such as spray bottles and rags for our staff to disinfect at their discretion. As of today, we have a steady supply of cleaning and disinfecting supplies to ensure that our staff and students can continue to disinfect their areas when needed. Our purchasing department and custodial supervisor are closely monitoring quantities of supplies to ensure we have what we need and we do not run low.
Yeah, just to jump on that, we have plenty of disinfecting cleaner, which has a really low dwell time, so there's not a long wait when the custodians are cleaning the desks. We also will have we have spray bottles fully loaded in each and every room and inside the district, and there'll be ample rags and paper towels for further use.
So these five fingers to fight COVID-19, there's a way of we all have to be aware before we can process and turn a practice into a habit. And Kenny Lossing, our assistant superintendent of business services, is going to share how we're helping get work. You're on mute.
I'm developing a bad habit. We had many staff members that collaborated to make signage available to all our school sites and the departments in the district. The signage is meant to provide visual guidance to support health and safety protocols. For instance, there are hand washing signs for the restrooms, both staff and student restrooms. These signs have graphics plus wording to remind everyone to wash their hands for 20 seconds with soap and water. There are signs available to help with social distancing. For instance, X marks the spot at 6-foot intervals. Sit here, don't sit here. These signs provide visual guidance to help everyone remember to perform the recommended safety protocols. The signs include graphics, so no one has to even read the sign. They can just look at it and they'll know what to do. The graphics, of course, help with our younger grades and perhaps some special needs students as well. Jolie Critchfield is working with our principals to determine what signs are needed for each school site because each school site has its own unique needs. The print shop, under Brian Horn's direction and Kevin Herberger's graphic design expertise, along with Val's hard work, they have the ability to customize signs for school sites to incorporate mascots and PBIS language to ensure our signage is working positively to provide the guidance to be safe due to COVID. Finally, the maintenance crew, custodial crew, and in some cases the grounds crew are currently hanging or applying these signs throughout our district with a goal of having all the signs in place by the beginning of school.
So there we have it, five fingers, form a fifth, and this is our way, as Angela said earlier, in the appeal to the community. If we exercise these five things, that's our ticket to freedom. That's our ticket to keeping schools open amid the spread of COVID-19. So, part of the plan, we're dedicated to it, and we want to work together, everybody, to do that, to ensure the health and safety of everyone. Earlier, Jessica had shared that the state mandated distance learning, and that distance learning is an essential part of all three instructional models. So a key component within our reopening plan is our instructional program model. And to help us tonight understand is Dr. Rocco Greco, our Executive Director of Student Engagement.
Okay. Thank you, Superintendent Cena. So tonight we're going to look a little bit at the instructional model. And as Mr. Cena had stated, distance learning is going to be a component of any of these models as we move through. So as we now know that we're going to be starting in distance learning, I know for the moment it's difficult for families. I think with the hopes of having kids coming back, I know for myself as a parent, it puts us in a situation where there's things that we have to look at and consider. But at the same time, having a wife that's a teacher, I also know the nervous energy that's building in teachers as they need to know what they're getting ready for on that first day. And so as we look through all of these different phases, the idea of distance learning is going to come up, because no matter what phase we're in, whether we're in distance learning or whether we're back in the classroom 2 days a week or full time, as we heard tonight, there's varied opinions, and there's going to be people who are going to want distance learning regardless until they feel it's safe to come back. And as a district, it's our obligation to make sure we're providing what all of our families need. So the plan that we've built so far, while it will continue to be fluid with details as it comes in from different stakeholders and incorporates continued staff input, the outline of the framework will allow us to move through these different phases without having to completely revamp or be caught off guard through the year. So for the school board, since the end of last year, we knew that there was going to be changes in the landscape continually. But we also knew there were going to be things that we could start doing to get ready to prepare for the distance learning component. We know in the classroom that our teachers are experienced, they know what they're doing, they do a wonderful job. We also know they're dedicated to the learning and being able to make that happen on a distance platform, though that is definitely difficult, and it's a learning process for all of us. So as that started at the beginning of the summer, we began to pay attention to some of the larger systems and the bills that were coming down that would allow us to prepare for a mandate such as this on distance learning. So since then, we've brought several things to the board, and there are several things that have set us up in order to be able to be successful as we go into this year. The bills that have recently come out, so SB 98, Ms. Critchfield later could provide additional details on the team effort we'll use to assure that students are going to stay engaged, and you heard some of the role of the pass offers and everything else in that. But it added to the endeavor the increased accountability being placed by the state. So that bill is basically letting us know that there will be live instruction and daily check-in with students. And how we navigate that has been made easier by some of the decisions that the board has made going for that. So in this accountability measure of live check-ins and talking with students, there's also a threshold of minimum number of minutes that a student is expected to be engaged through this process. And the board has voted to put several things in place that will make this easier on teachers and families. Because one of the things we heard from families, especially families with students at multiple schools, was the complexity of navigating different systems or knowing what one student was doing when another student was using a different platform. So earlier on in the summer, you voted for a single platform, and that was Google Classroom. And that facilitates teachers' online work and unifies the learning platform that parents will have to negotiate and creates one simple system for all of their students, no matter which school site they're at. Director Williams and Coordinator Stratton have worked to assure that all of our resources that the teachers and families will need are available in one simple, clever login platform that's very much iPad look-alike, so it's touch button to make it simple for everyone to get to everything that they need. And there'll be continued training coming up in our PD days right before we come back for school. By voting to move to one platform, you simplified our support and ability to train staff. So not just teachers, but support staff and everybody else will be working with families in order to make sure that they have everything that they need. Because as we've heard from many parents tonight, many people didn't train to be a teacher, weren't expecting to have to teach as a side job to their normal career. But that's the situation that we find ourselves in. And if we find a way, even with the frustrations and everything, to work together, I know that we can make this a great year for all of our students. So as we went into the end of the year, we provided PD time for teachers to get ready, to have a chance to build Google Sites and start to get those pieces in place for next year as we continue to work out the details. You also, as a board, voted to bring in a single grading platform that allows parents to view student progress, assignments that have been turned in all through their Aries portal. And for any parents out there listening, if you haven't signed up for an Aries portal yet, please contact your school to do that or get the information off of the web. Having that portal is going to make everything easier, as well as allowing you to do online re-registration for school next year, which will simplify the paperwork for you. When March hit, back when all of this started, every digital company immediately offered us just about everything for free to be helpful. And between Ed Services and technology, we were selective about the number of these that we made available, because one, we knew that the next year they wouldn't be free, and two, we were trying not to overwhelm everybody with too many resources going into this. And as a teacher, it was hard, I think, to invest large amounts of time in a program if you didn't know that it was going to be around or long running. So working with the union, there were three requests that you've heard about tonight, and some of them came through in the consent agenda earlier. And they were components from our current publishers. So the usage of data supported the union's request. So we saw that these programs were utilized a lot when they were added on during the distance learning time. And then Director Larson had the ability with Title IV funds to give us the flexibility to be able to fund MyOn, Passport, and Lexia for all of our school sites. Those are primarily literacy-based programs to allow for additional reading and literacy, because we know that literacy is the key to science, history, math, and general success in schooling. And with your vote to add these components tonight, you gave the teachers the tools they were requesting. You voted to adopt our science curriculum at an unknown budget time, assuring that all of our core curriculums now have up-to-date resources that are coupled with effective digital platforms. And we have training from those publishers coming for teachers in those subject areas as we come back to school outside of our PD days. So tonight, as we're talking about the reopening, I believe the main points that we really want to get across is the cohort model that you saw on the pamphlet that you got, the little handout on page 4. And really what it is what you would be voting on tonight is looking at not just the idea that we're going to be starting in distance learning, that we understand that in this plan, there's going to be phases. So we're in distance learning now. We hope to, as quickly as possible, transition into a hybrid model that'll eventually lead us back to our standard traditional model of schooling. So in doing that, you hear some of the health concerns. You know that the number of students in a room, the closer the proximity of contact, increases the risk. So the idea of trying to cut cohorts to 12 students, 10 students based on the room size, to be able to divide these down into groups so that students would be getting a couple days a week in school. Now, the details of the hybrid program, and this will continue to come through input on whether it's 2 days in a row, whether it's every other day for the students coming in, so a Tuesday and a Thursday or a Tuesday and a Wednesday, that piece is still to be worked out, the detail in that. But the idea that as we go through this, there's gonna be phases, and that as we move and we're told, okay, you can go back into school, that we're gonna have a couple of weeks to prepare and begin to phase in. Now, the big part I think that's important in all of this is if we didn't have to open on distance learning and we were just to throw 400 kids on campus and try with these protocols, I believe that very quickly we would have outbreaks and we would have to shut down and move away. So what this does, it gives us the ability to begin building. So earlier people had talked about waivers and county health support. So with county health support, while we're on distance learning, the ability to call in special needs students, students that have language additional needs, students that are having trouble engaging, maybe kindergarten students, students that need that contact, like one-on-one with a teacher, or a family that maybe needs one-on-one support, being able to call in small groups and do those individual meetings not only helps us build the relationships with families and students that we're going to need to be successful, but it also allows us to begin going over the health protocols and getting people to understand. As you look at the cohorts that come in, so if you were in a K-3 situation, class size, let's say 24-1, that would give us 4 cohorts of 6 students. And what that does is, as we were talking about keeping students in groups, as we move out of distance learning, instead of just immediately going to 2 days a week, it would allow us to transition through 1 day a week. You would bring students in for a full day. They would get 1 day in class with just the 6 students. That would be a small, less risk involved, so a lower risk criteria, and it would give teachers a chance to really drill home helping with the technology, helping with learning the protocols for safety as we continue to add up and then get the second cohort. So now we're into the full 2 day hybrid, and then eventually being to transition hopefully over to the full transition into traditional learning. Now in transitional learning, like I said earlier, there will still be families that are going to want distance learning, and it is our commitment to be able to offer that so that all families can feel safe in what they're getting and what they're doing as we move forward with the next year.
Good, thank you. And in distance learning, it's been mentioned several times by several different people that it'll be much different than last spring. And one of those ways is the the manner in which checking on students being active and being engaged. And our Director of Student Discipline and Attendance, Jolie Critchfield, is going to share some of the earnest feeling behind that.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Jolie Critchfield. I think it's going to be a team effort at the school sites. We want to definitely, prior to school starting, reaching out to families, making sure that, you know, they can kind of move their way through distance learning and be able to make sure their kids are able to log on. So all the support at the school sites, we're looking at probably the school secretaries as well as the PASS officers, the school resource officers, my office, everybody else, just making sure that reaching out to families, that they have somebody to call to connect with in addition to their teacher to make sure they're getting what they need to get to stay connected. That's the biggest thing through here is we want kids to feel connected to their schools. So like Dr. Greco said, you know, if we do go back in a hybrid or we go back to traditional and your student gets sick or has to quarantine, the family has to quarantine, they won't miss a beat with the education piece. They'll be able to continue their learning at home in a safe manner. And that's the biggest thing. And so with the one attendance being Aries, we'll be able to generate letters, you know, make sure that we're getting notification out to families right away if their kids are not participating, and hopefully with the teacher's communication as well with the students and the families. So it's going to be a team effort with all of us, families and school sites and teachers. So we're all in this together.
That'd be 98, and the mechanisms have been put in place to strengthen distance learning. Our Director of Fiscal Services, Jennifer Pasalia, has some insight.
Hi, thank you. So as you know, in most typical years, our majority of our funding allocation is based on student attendance, our ADA, the average daily attendance rate. But this year we get to focus, our focus this year will be on direct interaction with our students. And we take away that piece.
Thank you. Much of the discussion tonight has been about connectivity, and that's a key component in SB 98. And our Director of Technological Services, Mr. Brian Williams, is going to share about our unique challenges and solutions we're trying with connectivity.
Thank you, Mrs. Cena. So we will, similar to what we did in March, but on a grander scale, we will be checking out Chromebooks again. We have enough Chromebooks in our district to hit every student. We will also, in an effort in listening to some of the issues that parents and students were having, we're trying to make it easier for them to connect when they do have those Chromebooks. We'll likely be handing out little badges with QR codes so that students now will be able to log on just by holding the badge up to the camera on the Chromebook as opposed to having to remember a username and password every time. So we want to make it as easy as possible. As Dr. Greco mentioned, once they do get logged on, they're going to go to a portal now where everything that they need to have access to will be there for a single sign-on where they just have to click a button and it will take them right into it. That's going to make it hopefully easier for all of our students to utilize what they have. We were granted 750 hotspots as part of the deal that CDE made with Google. Those are coming from T-Mobile. They are based on cellular service. Down in the valley, they're going to work great. I've had staff over the last week or so spend hours of time driving around the foothills to see where those hotspots will be effective. We actually had better success than I thought we would in the lower foothills, but as expected, once we got past kind of the Loma Rica area, those hotspots, cellular service becomes really difficult to find, and so those hotspots weren't going to be as effective. So we wanted to make sure that we did everything we can to make sure those kids were able to receive the same services and the same lessons and everything that the students that had active internet were. So we will be continuing to leave internet on at the school site for a longer period of time. We've also tested and confirmed that we will be able to provide students, even in the foothills without internet, Chromebooks and thumb drives. Our teachers already have a program called Streamcastify where they can record their lessons as they give them on their computer or with Chromebook or the device that they're using. And they'll be able to put those video recorded lessons onto the thumb drives. Students will be able to take the Chromebooks home, access those thumb drives, see the lessons, even without internet. And so they'll still be able to see that. Teachers are in those, in the foothills, we've already talked to the principals up there, and they're already having discussions with teachers to make sure that they start recording those lessons and put people praying for that, so that we can hand the students a week's worth of lessons on thumb drive, and they'll be able to see everything that the students in class are going to be able to see as well. Not only will they get to the lessons, but as long as we can get the Chromebook into internet access once a week, it will sync, and that means anything that's in the Google Classroom will pull down, and they'll be able to work on it. Anything in the Google Drive will pull down, and they'll be able to work on it. When they get back in internet range, it will resync, and so they won't miss a beat. We wanted to really focus on those kids and find a way to make sure they were getting the same services as everyone else. And so I think we've got a method in place that's going to allow them to continue to have real rigorous lessons just like everyone else, and that they won't be missing out. So that was a challenge we had in March. I think we've come up with a solution to make that less of an issue moving forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Many questions from the stakeholders were regarding special ed students in particular. And our director of student services, Christina Royer, is going to share some insight on special ed.
Thank you so much, Superintendent Sina. Good evening to the board. Just like you said, Superintendent Sina, we know many parents and staff have the greatest concern about the specialized support for our learners who need it. We want to assure you that we share this concern, and this need for individualized support has also been carefully considered by district staff at every level. We are prepared to work together to plan for every student's needs. So Marysville Joint Unified School District will ensure students with disabilities and other special populations are fully integrated into every aspect of preparation and participation in the district's 2020-2021 pandemic plan. The needs of all students will be addressed, and the decisions made by the IEP and 504 teams will benefit all students, staff, and families. For our students with disabilities, documentation of specific supports and services during distance learning and blended learning models will be added to each student's plan. The district will work with the state of California, the California Department of Public Health, and our own local county department, the California Department of Education, and district staff to plan safe and effective support of all students' needs. Families of students with disabilities will be fully informed about how their child's learning needs will be addressed, and their learning will continue in a distance learning model or a blended learning model if a full-time in-person learning model cannot be offered. So in order to ensure that free and appropriate public education, or FAPE as we talk about, under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, the district will work with each family and student to determine how to meet each student's individual educational needs within the context of any instructional model required by the COVID-19 emergency. The district will use the IEP process to plan for the traditional school year, as we've discussed, and will include an emergency circumstances plan to address the potential for immediate or future school site closures. So instructional programs and specialized supports in the 2021 school year will look different, as we've talked about already this evening, than what was provided in the spring of the 1920 school year, with students provided more individualized and robust programs. Starting in March, staff pulled together quickly to teach students in new ways as the world came to terms with the pandemic's impact on schools and our lives. Since that time, district educators have been planning for even better delivery of this instruction and support at the start of the coming school year. Distance learning has evolved to provide a greater benefit to students in a short amount of time. New rules and regulations have been put in place requiring districts to ensure students benefit from the distance and blended learning models. These programs and supports will also continue to evolve. Additionally, we have experience with alternative learning programs, which are already in place in the district and have been shown to successfully support these students' learning.
Thank you. As you looked at the 39-page draft, you noticed there were sections that were green. That green sections, tell us what those mean, and tell us about early childhood
education in our preschool program, our director of early childhood education, Kathy Woods.
Good evening. Yes, I'm the green person on the 39-page plan. I wanted to share with you this evening that our child development program has worked in concert with the district stakeholders in the development of our reopening plan and have folded all of our preschool guidelines into the district plan. So it truly is representative of all children in our district. You know, when we talk about every child, every day, every way, it truly is a plan that includes our youngest of students, preschool through the 12th grade. As Mr. Cena mentioned, you'll notice in the 39-page reopening plan that there are sections that are highlighted in green, and those sections are specific to child development. And they're specific to child development because they are additional health and safety protocols that have been prescribed to us from the Department of Social Services because we operate licensed facilities in our classrooms, in our centers. So I wanted to share that our preschool instructional delivery model is coordinated and will look very similar to the elementary system that was described earlier by Dr. Recca. We're really trying to follow suit and have all of those elements in place, including distance learning, the blended delivery model, until we can get back to full in-person instruction. I have to share with you that our child development team has been meeting throughout the summer to design plans to ensure that we do meet the high rigorous standards for health and safety as prescribed by our state, by licensing, public health, but that we also provide a program that's developmentally, socially, and emotionally appropriate for our very, very young students. So we're excited to get back to work, and I have been appreciative of the district's inclusive approach to developing our plan.
Thank you. When we talked about the five key principles and the fifth fight COVID, that's in classrooms, offices, buses. On the back of the brochure, it talks about transportation. Our director of transportation, Mr. Greg Taylor, is going to share our plan for trip.
Yeah, thank you for having me. First, I want to say that on behalf of my drivers and my staff, we really miss our kids, and we're looking forward to the day that we have full transportation again. We have ordered cleaning supplies, face masks, and thermometers to ensure the safety of our students and our staff. We've also developed safety procedures for transporting the students, as well as cleaning our buses. With social distancing guidelines, the capacity of the bus has been extremely cut down. As an example, one of our standard 84-passenger buses now can only carry 14. So for the time being, under the current guidelines, we only have the capacity to transport a legally mandated population. Therefore, parents will need to plan for alternate transportation. Depending on circumstances, transportation could look differently throughout the year.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. And also on the back page of the brochure, our Nutrition Services Director, Amber Watson.
Hi, good evening. So our meal service program will continue with universal no-cost meals for our Marysville school students. And that will be for breakfast, lunch, and the supper meals. And it will not require meal applications. Safety precautions for food service will include a strict sanitation program that includes hand washing and glove use. In addition, we will be placing our menu items in a package so that the food is properly protected and contained. This will be essential in our mobile service as well to make sure the food is safe in transport. The delivery method for meal service is requiring a lot of flexibility. While on distance learning, we will serve curbside, and when all schools are on distance learning, we will open all schools to serve curbside, which will be very different from how we operated from March through July. As we progress through the blended model, we will adjust our meal service model to provide meals to students on any method of learning. or model of learning. Whether that's students in school session or on a cohort schedule or on a distance learning. We will accommodate and provide access to meals for all students, whether in school, curbside, or at a designated pickup location.
Thank you. And tying all this together, interwoven through all these interconnected parts and all these pieces that if you look at or touch one, you touch many at the same time. What transcends through all this is personnel. And our Assistant Superintendent of Personnel Services, Mr. Ramiro Carrion, is going to share just the how that process is working all those pieces together.
Well, thank you, Mr. Cena. And I can't punctuate or underscore enough the value of our staff, our employees. And I think about the amazing example that took place in early spring, where transportation employees made it possible to feed our students, where nutrition assistants dedicated their time and their commitment to ensure that we would feed our families. The teachers and administrators that came together at moment's notice organically to design lesson plans, to come together to help each other in a collaborative fashion. Ultimately, that's encouraging because we know that these employees are invested in our community and they're invested in our students that want the best for everybody. There are processes that we have to undergo. There are negotiations, drills, and processing and steps that will ultimately lead us to a collaborative situation that will provide the best opportunities for our students. We know that our students are here to learn, but they're here to learn because we have incredible employees. And these employees are valued, as I said earlier, and ultimately, through these processes that we'll undergo, it will enable us to fashion and bring together this amazing program that will supersede what we did in the spring and ensure that everybody's safe and everybody gets every opportunity to learn. So thank you, Mr. Cena.
Thank you. So this is our review of looking at a plan that, first of all, hopefully you heard in this expression that our ultimate goal is to prevent the spread of COVID-19. And the foundation of that is the five principles that form the fifth to combat COVID-19 and ensure the health and safety of our students and our staff. And that at the same time that we want to maintain relationships in all this craziness and then help students learn and grow. Those are the four things that we're committed to in this plan. And because of all the input that we have that's been mentioned tonight, and because we want to look at it and digest it and discuss it and come up with the best, it is a draft. And tonight we're asking the board to approve the approach, that we're on the right track, that we're moving, you know, it in the right direction. Even though we realize we start the year state mandated distance learning, that we'll continue to work and work on a plan that meets the needs of our students and our staff and achieve our four key goals. So now there's lots of questions. It would be happy to entertain those, and anybody will, whoever will pop up and answer.
Hey, I have a couple of questions.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Allison.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I have a few concerns here. First off, I've got to preface this with, I think that our staff here in Marysville has done a fantastic job in developing this plan. And they've made a far better plan than I listened to the UV City board meeting yesterday, and God, we're heads and tails above our sister school district across the river. But some of the concerns I have, I see a whole bunch of holes, and I think they need to be addressed. And I mentioned these before, some of them. I'm concerned about I don't understand what's going to happen to kids that refuse to wear a mask, and there will be those kids, and their parents support them. Okay, and another question I have is, I know that, you know, if we go 14 days, you know, and we go back to school, and we have a COVID case, and you kind of addressed this and when you were talking, but what happens when we have a COVID case? And when I read the plan, it looked like, and maybe I misread it, it said that, oh, well, if we have a COVID case, we don't have to close the schools down again. We close them down 14 days. We don't have to close them down again. I missed something there, I guess. Another one is T-Mobile up here in the hills in hotspots. I have a brother-in-law that has T-Mobile, and I know a couple other people that have T-Mobile. And here on my property, I can see Marysville from up here on top of this hill. And T-Mobile works in a real spotty place on our property, and it doesn't work at all in our front yard. And so I know I've talked to parents up here in the hills, and they don't, even your hotspots, they don't get a connection. So, you know, T-Mobile might not be the answer to those hotspots. We need to do something else. And alternate transportation. You know, I talked to parents up here, like up in Dobbin. You know, they can barely afford to drive their kids to school as it is. And sometimes, you know, I remember at Foothill, we'd have parents that the excuse was that, well, we didn't have enough money. The kid missed the bus, and we didn't have enough money for gas to drive him to school. And that happens all the time. And I just can't see these people that can't do distance learning because of the technology they have. I can see them not being able to make it to pick up packets. And I get these complaints from my constituents saying, you know, we just can't do this program. Now, don't get me wrong. All in all, I understand that you guys have worked really hard, and I really appreciate this program, but I still think that there's some things that need to be addressed because our school district is so different from other school districts that are down in the valley. And I can see 14 kids on a bus for the special needs kids, but then what do we do with the kids that can't go? So if you guys could answer some of those questions and kind of help me out here, that would be great.
One question, and we'll get this on the website, but on Friday, the state, the Department of Public Health, updated a guideline specifically for schools, and two of your questions are addressed in this item. One is that students who do not wear masks, that schools must exclude students from campus. It's not a discipline thing where they're disciplined, but if a student doesn't wear a mask, then we're to exclude them, and they'll learn distance learning at home. And when they're ready, when they wear the mask, that's their ticket. Their ticket back. Another question you had, you shared that if there's a case at a school, we won't shut that school down. Or I'm sorry, once we're off the watch list and 14 days expire and we're able to go to school, that once we do that, if we're back on the watch list, the school doesn't have to come back or doesn't have to go back. And that all depends on how well that school, everybody at the school, is practicing the five guiding principles of health and safety protocols. So the more we practice it, the more freedom we buy. We buy out of the watch list, and then we buy staying off the watch list, and then we stay into getting to more and more traditional school.
Hey, Gary, and there's one thing I forgot to mention I'm really afraid of. My nephew has a really good friend down in L.A. that had a 9-year-old that they don't know how they do it because they were doing social distancing and all kinds of things, but he contracted COVID-19. He was in the hospital for 6 weeks. He finally is well and is at home,
but he has a heart condition now that's going to affect him for the rest of his life. So I'm really concerned about, you know, pre-K through second grade and what's going to happen with these kids. So I just don't know how you can reassure me here. But and I honestly think that the state guidelines, I know these things are written by health officials and legislators, and I don't think they understand our concerns and our problems up here in the hills, because they don't live up here. They don't understand how the people in Dobbins and Brownsville and all these other places, what their lives are like. They just don't see it. And most of them, I don't think, even send their kids to public school. That's it.
Gary, I have a question. Gary, I have a question. I got something in my throat. I asked you yesterday, some of the teachers had texted me and want to know if they bring their kid, they go to school, they want to go to their classroom, but they said a lot of them have small kids, said, can they bring them into school? And you said that they were still negotiating that because they're worried about health care for their, services for their kids. They don't want to put them in a preschool because they said that's more dangerous. And there's, I think four have texted me, they're concerned about that.
And, well, Mr. Fleury, thank you for your question and your concern. And we have similar concerns, of course, but I don't know that it's something that we can address tonight in a manner that would appease everybody. Obviously, there are some impacts and effects there that need to be discussed. And also, there are some liability issues that need to be addressed across the board. So to that end, we're trying to research every opportunity where we can provide the best situation for our employees to be comfortable. I don't know that we can address that or answer that tonight in a way that would appease everybody, but ultimately we want to make sure that we make a full, educated, and rationalized decision as we move forward and discuss it with the other ladies.
I appreciate that, because there's a concern if the teachers have to put their kids into a preschool and to take them to school, a real concern. So, but thank you, Ramon. I appreciate it.
Any other comments? I have maybe a comment with Christina, that you kind of mentioned about our new brochure that you alluded to tonight, and that was kind of came out of our 39-page report that we unveiled in July. And they are listed on our website. I would kind of hope that maybe we could get those up on top of our website so people can find them much easier, and they're a little more bold. And also, we have a summary draft of the reopening plan for health and safety protocols. So again, it seems like we've taken our original July 7th plan that's already morphed into a maybe more condensed plan, but maybe both those documents, if we can get it on our website, so it's much easier for our people to get to and be able to see that. So I do think that, again, when we have, it's just like, you know, Mr. Allison's concerns, we're going to have concerns every day because the COVID-19 changes every day. And to try to have all the answers in place right now are something that is impossible. And I think what we're trying to do is to provide the best possible plan to try to keep all of our staff and students safe, but also try to provide that education also. Are there any other comments or questions from board members? If not, I'm going to make a motion. The motion is to approve the approach set forth in the 2021 Marysville Joint Unified School District draft school plan, school opening plan, subject to reasonable revisions. So what we're looking at is, and kind of summarizes that 39-page draft that we unveiled in July 7th to be able to move that forward and make reasonable revisions within that draft that you see that we've already done that. So the motion again is to approve the approach set forth in the 2021 Marysville Joint Unified School District draft school opening reopening plan, subject to reasonable revisions. Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone, absent. Trustee Allison.
I just want you to know I'm really torn here from the comment I got from a father that said, open the schools, COVID or no COVID, 5 days a week, to my nephew's friend, to the people, to the lady up in Dobbins that said, we can't get no internet anyways. So I just have to say, this does have quite a ways to go, and there's a lot of holes to fill, so I have to vote nay.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, a yes. Motion carries, 5 yes, 1 no, Mr. Allison, and then 1 absent. As we alluded to earlier at the beginning of the meeting, this item is actually going to have 2 motions. And I'm going to make the second motion. The motion is to approve distance learning as the instructional delivery model for beginning the 2021 school year, until which time state and county health orders may allow for a change in the instructional delivery model. I'll read that one more time. Motion to approve distance learning as the instructional delivery model for beginning the 2021 school year, until which time state and county health orders may allow for a change in the instructional delivery system. So again, in summarizing, we're going to do distance learning until the state or county health orders say maybe we can do something different. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone, absent. Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 6 yes. We actually have Mr. Fleury would like to close the meeting in honor of one of our former employees.
Yes. I'd like to close this meeting in the memory of Evelyn Notestein. This is a partial eulogy given to me by her daughter, Patricia Vanover, who was her oldest daughter. Evelyn passed away on June 23rd, 2020. She had 4 children, Patricia Vanover, Sandra Notestein, Rebecca Black, and Randall Notestein Jr. She had a son, Earl, that passed away, and that would have been her eldest. She loved working for the district for about 25 years, 23 at Marysville High. She came out of retirement as a housewife to begin doing that. She said she loved working with the ladies she worked with. There was more than a job, she said. It was a place of friendship and fellowship. She often said her co-workers were like sisters and daughters to her. She has had a total of 10 grandkids, and her daughter, Patricia, raised 31 foster children, which she loved all of them. In addition, she loved making embroidery, towels, baby blankets, gifts. She loved giving to gifts to others. Patricia said she is grateful for the support Marysville Unified gave him during this difficult time. Thank you and God bless.
Thank you, Mr. Fleury. I would also just like to thank Mr. Williams for helping us navigate through our first Zoom conference meeting. And hopefully from now on, we'll be able to continue it. I'd also like to thank all the board members for their diligence on preparing for tonight's meeting and all the input. The last thank you would be for all the folks that were calling in and giving us their comments. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
Good job, guys.